Byrd, good morning to you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Anytime I don't use an argument, I'd like to pay for rebuttal. Morning. May it please the court. My name is Troy Byrd. I'm with the Hoppe Law Firm, and I represent the appellant, Samuel Turner. We appear today on the basis of two arguments for errors that we believe were committed in the trial, at the trial court level in the juvenile court. First is on due process, and the second is on reasonable efforts. In due process, the U.S. Supreme Court stated that persons faced with forced dissolution of their parental rights have a more critical need for procedural protections than do those resisting state intervention into ongoing family affairs. When the state moves to destroy weakened familial bonds, it must provide the parents with fundamentally fair procedures. For a brief history of this case, Mr. Turner had a child, Tayson, and this case was brought to the attention of the juvenile court not because of anything that Mr. Turner had done. Mr. Turner was incarcerated for nearly the entire duration of this case. For a short time, he was incarcerated here in Nebraska, and then he was moved to South Carolina to spend the rest of his sentence there in a federal prison. During the time that he was in Nebraska, there was minimal contact between the DHHS caseworker and Mr. Turner. Because Mr. Turner was in South Carolina at the time of the formal hearing for termination of his parental rights, he was not transported to attend physically that hearing. And the court did not afford him the opportunity to attend via video, telephone, or via any other meaningful method.
Did he ask for those means?
We had asked previously, and those requests had been denied.
Can you clarify that, and what would the record reflect with respect to a request to appear, say, telephonically at the termination hearing itself? So,
sure.
If any request.
Sure. From the best of my recollection, the requests that had been made previously were prior to the formal hearing for termination of parental rights. We had requested transportation to other hearings, which were denied. And
dispositional hearings.
They would have been review-type hearings.
Review hearings.
Yes. And then, honestly, for telephonic hearings, I did not make a motion on that because I knew that they would have been denied. The longstanding, in my experience, the standard is that when telephonic hearings are requested, they typically are denied.
That's not in our record?
It's probably not.
And you say that you made early requests to be transported to hearings. Was that under the statute that allows someone to request that if they pay for their own security?
From what I remember, it would have been. But I could be wrong on that. And now, physical presence at the hearing is unnecessary for a termination of parental rights, provided that the parent has been afforded procedural due process for the hearing to terminate parental rights. When a person has a right to be heard, procedural due process includes a reasonable opportunity to refute or defend against a charge or accusation, a reasonable opportunity to confront and cross-examine adverse witnesses, and to present evidence on the charge or accusation. The extent to which procedural due process must be afforded a recipient is influenced by the extent to which the recipient may be condemned to suffer grievous loss. The U.S. Supreme Court adopted a three-part test detailing the criteria which governs the inquiry concerning whether due process has been satisfied in a particular case.
Was this a one-day trial, two-day trial?
This was a one-day trial.
At any time during that trial, was your client given the opportunity to present evidence? Did the court offer that?
Outside of, the court did allow me the opportunity to present evidence. However, my client was not a part of any portion of the hearing in order to rebut any of the evidence that had been provided. And so unless it was something that was directly addressed between him and I prior to the hearing, he would not have had an opportunity to be able to rebut that.
Did you have the ability to communicate with him during the trial?
No, Your Honor. The only method I had to communicate with him was via email through the prison system in South Carolina. And that was not an effective means to communicate even within the same day.
Is that in our record?
I don't know that is in the record, but there was no other means to communicate with him.
Was there any request made to have him available by telephone so you could contact him after witnesses were called and testified? Any requests made with the prison system to do that?
There was not an opportunity to do that. The judge made a bench ruling that his rights were terminated. The three-step factors that I had been discussing, the court must weigh, number one, the private interests will be affected by the proceeding. Number two, the risk to parents of an erroneous deprivation. And number three, the government's interest in making that determination. The dissent in the State versus Monique B. stated that the risk of erroneous deprivation is magnified unless incarcerated parents are allowed to consult with counsel, present evidence, and confront the state's witnesses. Other states also agree. In Iowa, there's case law that state that incarcerated parents must be given the opportunity to participate in a hearing by other means. In Delaware, the case law states that due process is satisfied when the parent is allowed to participate in the entire hearing via phone. Other states require incarcerated defendants meaningful access to the courts when far less substantial rights are at stake compared to parental rights. And even here in our own state, we require that incarcerated individuals be allowed to appear telephonically for hearings affecting their personal property, such as property rights in probate or debt collection matters. The trial court should have allowed Mr. Turner to appear by telephone, video conference, or at least be able to review a reproduction of the case against him before presenting his own case.
I'm still having trouble with how we get to this claim if the request wasn't made to the trial court.
In my opinion, it's a right instead of a procedural rule. And it should have been a right that was upheld both by the prosecution and the trial. It's akin to perfecting service, in my opinion. And it needs to be done before moving forward.
Are you framing it as plain error?
Yes.
Do you have any authority for that proposition?
As far as being plain error?
Yes.
Off the top of my head, I don't.
Thank you.
I think the closest that I could come would be the dissent in the case.
Monique.
Yes, I think that's Inree LV.
In Monique, however, the parent had requested a hearing.
They had. Similarly, in our case, it was noted on the record that any continuance would have been denied.
Can you explain why you would phrase it like that?
Sure. At the commencement of the termination hearing, judge had asked if I specifically was going to ask for a continuance, and I stated that because my client is in prison in South Carolina, the court was probably not likely to transport him. The judge then agreed and stated on the record that any request would have been denied. As far as reasonable efforts on this matter, reasonable efforts were necessary per the state statute at section 43, 283.01. In this case, there were no aggravated factors of abuse. And subsection 2 requires that reasonable efforts be made to preserve and reunite the child with the parent.
What efforts were not made?
So that I can save some time for rebuttal, summarily, the caseworker had very minimal contact with Mr. Turner for the first 7 months of the case. He didn't even know that the paternity results had been received in November of 2017. He found that out in June of 2018 when the caseworker made contact with him. At that point, they discussed some visitation. He requested visitation. He was never given any visitation. And then he was transported to South Carolina, where no further services were afforded him.
Was your client at the birth?
I don't know. I'm inclined to say no, because he was unaware that Tayson was his son. But I don't know for sure. But I would like to save the remaining minute that I have for rebuttal. Thank you
very much. Ms. Kerr, good morning to you.
Good morning, Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Danielle Kerr, and I represent the state of Nebraska, appellee in this case. The state at this time would respectfully request this court affirm the juvenile court's order terminating the parental rights of Mr. Turner as to Tayson D. Tayson was born in July of 2017. He He was immediately removed from his mother's care because she admitted that she had used drugs while she was pregnant. Throughout this case, the state filed a termination of parental rights as to Mr. Turner in October of 2018. The separate juvenile court held a termination hearing in March of 2019, and at that time, the separate juvenile court found that the state proved by clear and convincing evidence that the rights of Mr. Turner should be terminated as to Tayson D. Appellant alleges two issues before the court. The first is that the Department of Health and Human Services did not provide reasonable efforts to reunify Mr. Turner and Tayson, and second, that Mr. Turner was not afforded due process rights because of lack of access to the courts.
The termination was based on three grounds. Is that right?
Correct. Yes.
So is it your view then that two of these grounds have been conceded?
Yes. Two of the grounds have been proved by clear and convincing evidence. They are not before the court on appeal. So, and best interest was also proved. So Mr. Turner's parental rights should still be terminated.
But does the challenge based on the absence of a phone appearing by phone or other means, would that infect the validity of the other two grounds? In other words, he specifically attacked the sub six reasonable efforts, right? But hasn't specifically addressed two neglect or seven, the 15 months plus.
Correct.
But would the argument that he's making as to the reasonable efforts necessarily apply to those other two grounds?
If this court were to find that Mr. Turner's due process rights were violated, then yes, that would affect all grounds of his termination. However, I would argue that Mr. Turner was afforded due process rights. This court has stated that a parent does not have a constitutional right to physical presence at a termination hearing. That was first before this court in In Re Interest of LV in 1992. This court has stated that due process can be afforded if a parent is afforded counsel, which Mr. Turner was represented by counsel, has a hearing before an impartial decision maker, which was present in this case, has an opportunity to confront and cross-examine the state's witnesses. The state only had one witness, but Mr. Turner's counsel did cross-examine that witness, did not object to any of the state's exhibits, and had an opportunity to present evidence of his own.
Counsel, and Chief, were you going to ask a question?
Go ahead. Please.
In this case, the court at the very beginning of the termination trial said, on the record, any request to continue, I would deny. It's difficult to appear when you're incarcerated, especially in another state, and I have no way to secure his attendance from North Carolina, so we'll go ahead and proceed with the hearing today. Is that statement by the court broad enough to encompass an implied denial of telephonic or video appearance?
I don't believe so. There was no actual specific request for telephonic appearance. There wasn't actually an official request to continue either. The request was perhaps maybe to appear physically, which Mr. Turner did not have a constitutional right to appear physically. And because there was no request to appear telephonically or a request to continue in order to appear telephonically, that was not actually brought before the juvenile court judge. So that issue has not been preserved for appeal.
What is the recent law out of Iowa on the telephonic appearance? Are you familiar with that?
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay. And my recollection is it seems to put the burden on the court to make telephonic arrangements. Do you want to comment on that?
I believe there was a case where the Iowa court stated that it was... Yes, you are correct. On the court to provide the parent with a meaningful participation, including a telephonic hearing. However, that is not the precedent in Nebraska.
If I understand Mr. Bird's argument correctly, he said that it was not possible or extremely difficult for him to communicate with his client during trial so that he could not effectively consult with his client about what a witness may have said, for example. What does our record show on that, and is that, in fact, a due process problem?
Sure. That record is on page 3 of the Bill of Exceptions. Mr. Byrd did state that he had been communicating with his client for 6 weeks prior to the termination hearing via email, and that he did have direction from his client that his client objected to the termination of his parental rights. There was a case, State v. Travis B., where the court held part of the termination hearing, then sent the transcript to the father who was incarcerated in Texas, and gave him an opportunity to be deposed. He chose not to take that opportunity and then reconvened the termination hearing at a later date where the father was able to participate telephonically. This court stated that that went above and beyond what was required of the due process rights. And so I would argue that he was not afforded any violation of his due process rights by not appearing telephonically. And Mr. Byrd did have sufficient time, 6 weeks, to communicate with his client about the grounds for the termination and what he'd like to do as far as the termination hearing.
But the Travis procedure, and that procedure exists in other states, is essentially a bifurcated procedure, right? Where the moving party puts on the evidence, and then there's a transcript afforded to the parent.
That is correct.
Right, who then says something to his or her counsel about what misperceptions may have been made or how to cross-examine and so forth.
That is correct.
Okay. But what we have said about that is not required.
That is correct, yes. That process of bifurcating and having the termination trial in two separate hearings, first for the state to put on evidence and then for the parent to put on evidence, is above and beyond what is required of due process. Mr. Turner was also provided with reasonable efforts to reunify with his son, Tayson. At the removal, Ms. Sturgeon, at the termination hearing, Ms. Sturgeon testified that when Tayson was removed from his mother's care, Tayson's mother stated that Mr. Turner had been present at the hospital during birth and that she stated that he was the alleged father. When Ms. Sturgeon met up with, finally, Mr. Turner in June of 2018, he stated that he had been in Saline County Jail since November of 2017. Ms. Sturgeon suspected that he was at the Saline County Jail because of statements from Tayson's mother. She had checked with Saline County Jail, and for some reason, Saline County was unable to confirm that he was there, so she was not able to actually have a face-to-face meeting with him until June of 2018. However, at that time, Mr. Tayson did say that he was aware there was an open DHHS case, and that he was aware he was a potential father, at least, to Tayson. And so I would argue that between July of 2017, when Tayson was removed, and November of 2017, when Mr. Turner was incarcerated, he had all those months to be able to come forward as a potential father, to make contact with Tayson, to communicate with the familial foster placement. He did not do any of those things. The department was unable to locate him until June of 2018. However, Ms. Sturgeon did state at the termination hearing that she was able to at least attempt to contact him monthly via multiple ways, through the familial placement, through Tayson's mother, through other family connections, through social media, but she was unable to contact him until that June of 2018. And then at that 2018 meeting, gave her his contact information, which did not change throughout the case, and told him that Mr. Turner needs to keep in contact with the department because she won't know where he's going to be transferred to. He did not do that, and the only time he reached out to the department was in December of 2018, after the state had filed for termination of his rights. As such, I would argue that the department did provide reasonable efforts to attempt to reunify the family.
Was the foster care placement here ultimately with Mr. Turner's daughter?
Correct. And Mr. Turner stated to Ms. Sturgeon that he was the one that suggested his daughter as a foster placement for Tayson.
So does that factual uniqueness in this case make a difference as to whether or not adequate efforts were made by the department?
Yes. Because it was a familial placement, it was another avenue for the department to try and attempt to contact Mr. Turner, which they did, and Ms. Turner had stated that she did not know where her father was during those months. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor, 1 minute and 5 seconds.
1 minute and 5 seconds. Mr. Byrd.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'd just like to conclude my argument by saying that before the juvenile court can sever the parent-child bond, it must ensure that the parent is given meaningful access and a full and fair opportunity to present evidence on his or her behalf. Had Mr. Turner been defending his property rights in probate or a debt collection proceeding, he would have been afforded his due process and been given meaningful access to the court. Mr. Turner was taking part in a parental termination hearing, defending his rights to parent his son, and therefore he should have been granted meaningful access, at the very least via telephonic or video appearance, because children are more valuable than property.
Is that something the legislature should do, or is that something this court should do?
I believe that it's something that this court can do in affording and upholding due process rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will go on to the next case of the day then, which is State versus Gomez. Justice Frydenberg is recused from this matter.